Do you have the regulations for public space parks?
I have regulations for the town parks, and then another one, which is the ordinance on deals with sidewalk dying in front of schools. The park regulations, for example, have a provision that prohibits begging and panhandling in a park. What you don't have here is the actual town ordinance on panhandling on sidewalks, which is a separate thing that I don't think we need to have. I think this is really what we're talking about, what happens in the town park, and y'all can look at these and see if this is addresses some of your concerns. And this is the this is if you're in the talk about on the public sidewalk, being able to, if you have a photo of the sidewalk putting in a table and chairs, and allowing people to eat in front of your restaurant on Franklin Street or other downtown areas. And somewhere there you'll see a recent amendment that allows services of alcohol for people sitting in those locations. And in the park ordinance, we did recently, at the request of the Downtown Economic Development Commission, make an adjustment so that if we ever had a special event in the town park, or we were sponsoring or some other nonprofit was sponsoring an event, we could provide their alcohol service. So they were contemplating having some events possibly on Lot 5 this summer. And for the alcohol at a concert, and they didn't have time to get those plans completed to do it this summer, but that's the big difference in there as well. But all these are all ordinances, and the ordinances are potentially going to be adjusted by the council to determine what's going to be in there.
So, this where it says non-alcohol beverages is still permitted, is that what I...
We just made it available.
Okay.
We just made it legal.
The alcohol, you can show the alcohol on empty places on the side.
Well,
and you could do that in a town park now at an event approved by the council. Mm-hmm. And if this were designated as a town park, as is, the Rosemary, the roof of the wall is approved by the town park, covered with these regulations.
Right now, the roof of the wall is like,
is it
town park?
Right. And we've had issues with people up there. Not as many because not many people go up there. It's just sort of hard to get to.
Is there any big deal
in
converting to town park?
No.
Few questions.
This is just after the comments. There wouldn't be a process like abandoning the bike?
Yeah.
Okay. Council voted on simple motion.
Yeah, there's a part of our need to build a roof for that facility. It would just be the home.
When was that built?
93. Yeah.
Well, I mentioned that in the proposal, instead of reading the memorandum of understanding, we realized that there was a miscommunication and a misunderstanding. And before we get too much farther, I thought I'd better just point it out. Unless you know. And if this relates back to what we were speaking about previously with respect to the 40-year lease, ground lease, on the retail component. It's almost exactly opposite. But in the proposal, what Ram was saying was that at any point they would have the option to convert their ground lease interest into a fee simple interest by making a payment to the town there was a formula, that payment would be determined by a formula that would be $2.50 per square foot of retail space divided by 8.75% cap rate. And that's illustrated in the financial benefit to the town, but I agree and I understand where the confusion came from, and I see that maybe that was not communicated as clearly as it should have been or needed to be to convey that concept. So
either that or it wasn't a concept that you were you understood it and you weren't willing to entertain that as a concept.
I understood I thought it in town as a 40-year lease where it ended and that at a period in time you could in effect buy out the lease or rather than continue to pay the base rent, you could buy that rent out, and you avoid the CPI adjustment, and you buy it out at the cap rate applied to the base rent at the time you do it. All that did was stop you from paying base rent for the rest of the lease term.
Okay.
But all you ended up with was a prepaid lease, like the other leases.
Right. Okay.
So that's how we interpreted what was in there.
We never understood until you said right now that you expected to have the right to buy the property in fee simple. And I don't recall the council ever entertaining a willingness to do that. In fact, it's been just the opposite. The council from the very beginning has said that it has no interest in selling the property.
We have a question in terms of one of the things that we sort of loosely mentioned in our RFP was the idea of well, two things. First was the reverter concept where something is basically owned fee simple and then reverts back to the town in 99 years. And then the other concept, which we did not entertain in the RFP and we wanted to talk a little bit about, was if there is a point where there really is market resistance, because we certainly know that this works in places, but we also know that there's places that it doesn't work, could there be some kind of instrument within this document somewhere down the line where there's a buyout of whatever, I guess like an additional buyout, so that it does revert to fee simple, maybe, you know, in 50 years or, you know, whatever those things may be, we're just tossing something out. If there's something that's going to inhibit the project from being successful, I mean, we all believe and we're willing to, which we've stated, report on this basis, but what if there is an issue down the line, and I'm not sure we understand what a resolution to the potential issue is, but if there is a potential issue, I know it's important for the town to retain ownership, but I'm not sure I have a total handle on what that means to the town or how we sort of cross that bridge if it needs to get crossed.
I don't think we have an answer for that.
Okay.
Well, okay, we're looking at it as 99 years and 40 years. And we were aware of the reference to the reverter and had talked about it. I think we still are much more comfortable. And we were looking at 40 and 99.
I understand.
And the reverter would have been on the 99. And to me, I don't think that's got much impact on the market because it's still a 99-year lease, basically.
Correct.
And the Centennial Campus of Interstate is our 99-year land lease condominium because the state owns the land. We did that project, and it's under that thing.
What type of product is it?
Condominiums. Residential.
What kind of price range, or?
I don't remember.
You don't remember? Okay.
They're not cheap.
Okay. Do you know if there's any market resistance to that?
Initially, there was market resistance. I don't know whether it was the way they were marketed or whether it was in 99 years or who was marketing it.
Because we have found, like I said, certainly in more urban areas that
yeah.
The concept of.
And you have more experience in Florida than.
In Florida, we do find resistance
yeah.
to that type of a concept. We recently done a project where we were actually getting resistance from some of our lenders to it. Now, not that that can't get done, and we did say during the process, we know it can get done. But we did find some resistance when we were able to negotiate basically what we're talking about doing, that there was a price tag at some point in the future that if the people then in place needed to buy it out, it sort of alleviated the whole situation. So I know that there's no resolution for any of that today, but I wanted to throw that out there just as food for thought.
My understanding from our meetings is that the council is due the retention of the fee simple is very, very fundamental.
Right.
And the way it's been presented to the community has had those key points. I'm afraid it would undermine everything.
Right.
Would this be so different from how it's been presented?
I think our concerns are really what we just wanted to explore.
Sure.
Is in order to attain our ultimate goal, what happens if we find that we can't reach that goal because this is a roadblock? And so we wanted to at least have a conversation and a discussion to consider, are there mechanisms that can be put in place to prevent or to ensure a success, rather? So, you know, instead of preventing the failure, are there ways to ensure the success? Are there ways to overcome and to counteract those obstacles? And a lot of it is just professional, and we realize that. But it's because we're not in Manhattan at all.
It's very easy for me to reveal my ignorance because there's so much of it, and I'm going to reveal a little bit right now. That it is part of the reluctance, the sense that people have of, well, I'm not going to be able to pass this on, or I'll have something that will sound real stupid to all the attorneys. Is there some way that the town could agree that this group that's being created would have the first right of refusal, or its equivalent, to another 99-year lease after this one runs out, or something like that that you can put way out there?
Mm-hmm. 1-year increments, or 5-year increments, or 100-year increments?
Is there some way you could structure it so that after a certain period of time, another 25 years gets tacked on, or something, so that people have greater security?
Yeah.
That kind of thing would seem to be consistent with what the council is interested in.
That's going to be at the 50-year mark. That's going to be at the halfway point. What I'm saying is, if you were to buy something that, and there's 99 years left on it, you know that he's going to make it to my children, they're safe. If he buys it, he'll be 80 in 50 years. Then he's only got 44 years left on it. 79 in 7 months. So
he likes to know that there's
I'm saying at that 50-year mark, halfway through the 99 years is when the title gets dramatically affected in terms of the resale.
So, at
50 years, what is an opportunity to take on the option period?
Right. Halfway through the expiration of the 99 years is when you need to address that in order for the resale market to be undisturbed in terms of it being easily transferable.
And you could provide an option at the end of 50 years to extend the lease rate for an additional 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Which you have. But you can't do this indefinitely. I mean, you can do it once.
That's what I'm saying. At that point, it's irrelevant because the building's obsolete. After 125 years, there'll be new lead standards, there'll be new building materials.
Well, something like that would give comfort and make it easier for you to market. That would not be inconsistent with the town's interests. If y'all can think of something like that.
Well, that's what we wanted to just,
And I understand your
concern. Express our concern.
Explore that kind of arrangement. That would protect the town's long-term interest. We've been here a couple hundred years. We've been here a couple hundred years more. And so our interest really is much longer, probably, than them. With all due respect, y'all ain't going to be around 200 years from now.
Why not? I just wanted to talk about that out loud. And then, sort of going along with that, which may segue a little bit, but one of the concerns that we had was, and we had talked about this in the RFP a little bit, is what if when we get ready to build, or if there are issues on the marketing of the condos, what are the options in terms of the flexibility to make this rental if we need to based upon the market conditions? We all want to have to sell product, but the question is that we also don't want to sit with vacant buildings or not be able to build the project because either we don't have enough pre-sales or if we've found a mechanism around that, you know. And I know the town doesn't really want to do rentals, and that's not where we're all going with this, but, you know, trying to think.
But the reality is,
what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, again, you keep hitting on the issues that we all discussed in depth.
That's great. We don't really have a time to yet.
The town's view, very strongly, is that they want full-time permanent residents there.
Right.
They're not interested in investors, they're not interested in renters, and so you have to balance what you're talking about against the town's objective.
Well, okay, and we understand that because our objective is to be for self-product, so, you know, for the first, so again, if the market's not going to hold up, if, you know, interest rates skyrocket or whatever those reasons are, at some point it may preclude us. We will all be far down the line, and it may preclude us moving forward at all. You also have, you know, we all want it, and to make sure that we say this out loud, as much as we all want it to be full-time residents year-round, we will end up with investors. We will end up with, you know, we won't be able to legislate totally what, who and what we want to have there. We can market the project and create a project that's going to encourage and entice what we'd like to see and what the town would like to see, but, you know, you won't be able to preclude every type of person who comes in from doing that.
And also, Felisa, I mean, I struggle a little bit with the concept of defining who is a full-time resident when we're in a college community, and you've got people who consider them to be lifetime residents of Chapel Hill that are professors at the university and take sabbaticals and go to Australia for the summer. They're visiting professors at another university and they leave. I think it starts to make our market for the end user and therefore the success smaller and smaller if you can't say to Alan Farn over here at Investors Title, wouldn't you like to own one of these units for all of the people that come in for training? And I know that that doesn't fit the profile of who the town is viewing as the ideal citizen to live in that unit, but at some point, I think it's very difficult to identify and to regulate what does full-time mean. And
well, you know, further than that, any restrictions on who can buy this is going to limit the ability for what you're going to be able to charge for it and what the end market resale is going to look like. And if it's not a liquid resale, it's not going to be a viable project. If I can't resell mine to you or you because you're not here full-time, you don't meet the age, you something or other, it restricts my ability to sell it, which hampers the purchase price, which in the long run isn't good for anyone. Our opinion is that the Chapel Hill market is not an investor market as it would be defined in other areas of the country, so that's not going to be who we're looking at buying these. But we are looking at these as people who have in-town residences for certain weekends of the year. And, you know, to prohibit people based on any criteria of who can buy this, I don't think it's in the spirit of what does the town stand for. If we're saying that vagrants are part of the Chapel Hill environment, we should be able to say that whoever wants to live here should be part of the environment, understanding that you don't want it to be student housing. But
if we wanted to create the kind of housing that's used by wealthy alumni, that's been really easy to do. There's a corporation that specializes in building that kind of housing. They were sitting in my office a month ago asking for the opportunity to do it. They would love to have the property that we've got in the play right now. But that's not what the council has said it wants to do. And I don't think that's going to happen.
And I'm not sure we're saying we want to do that, but you can't preclude somebody. We're not looking for the project to turn into that either. It's interactive, it's all of those things. But I also can't tell you, or shouldn't be able to tell you, that as an alumni, you're precluded from buying here. Like, tell me what your lifestyle is like, and oh, you're an alumni who's only going to do it on weekends, so sorry, you can't buy. But I think you have to be really careful of that, too. So I think that there's other ways, you know, we have to create the project and how the space works and all of that, which will help set the tone for what the project needs to be.
And I think potentially we're all hypersensitive on this point. When the market, I think, will show you that it will be absorbed by normal percentage standards, and most of this will be people who want to walk to work in Chapelville. I mean, that's who we're counting on buying this, is that these are people who are already here, who don't want a house, and these are people who are relocating here and want to be able to walk to work and not have to own a car or a second car. So I think we might be hypersensitive to a very small majority of potential buyers that we're trying to identify in their poor preclude.
So let's go with the full-time resident year and age restriction and see what happens.
Well, you can't do an age restriction. What if I bought a unit and I'm with my husband and I get pregnant?
I'm not sure you can't do an age restriction.
You can't just spin a bill and apply.
That you can, but that's for seniors 55 and over.
But the way the court's ruling is for whatever you want to. In other words, an age restriction is not something that is per se bad.
Well, I don't know if anything that's been upheld other than the 55 and over. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that has been upheld. But, you know, think about in terms of marketing, part of what I heard Chapel Hill say at one time is maybe a family wants to live there. So you're so busy trying to keep the students out that you're
talking about the owners.
But he can buy it and put it in his own name, and then wherever he wants to live, everyone
else. Oh, no, he's 23, and then he's got to be a full-time resident.
But then that's an occupant.
Occupants could be any age, but the owner, the city, or the owner.
But what I'm
the
saying
owner
is
supposed to live there.
But why couldn't, I mean, so you're saying you couldn't rent it for it at all?
You could rent it to somebody that's older than 23.
No, they really don't want you to rent it at all.
We really don't.
We want owner occupancy.
Okay, but you can't.
And we want full-time residence.
And we want that too, but you can't tell somebody that they can't, you know, that they have to leave their unit sitting vacant if there's any myriad of issues.
We didn't ask for that. We just said that you had to have a minimum of a one-year lease, at least to somebody who's 23 or older.
Right.
So, I mean, that would, the objective is, and this is what I mean, that we're under if we don't want to build student housing.
But what if somebody who's 21 years old, they just graduate from Carolina, they're married and they're working for the university, and or maybe it's just them and they're working for the university. They're 21, they graduate from Carolina, they're going to be a school teacher at Glenwood, and they want to live there. And they can't buy it into the affordable housing. Aren't we trying to create workforce housing for our young?
This will then apply to
the workforce.
They don't qualify for workforce housing, but they could still afford a one bedroom.
I don't know if you can do this, but you know, it would be acceptable. Something like that would be acceptable. What we're asking for is help in defining this in a way that works. I mean, you could say 23 or older, or if you're out of school.
You have 100 units, just as an example. We're going to put 20 of those into affordable housing. They're off to the side, they're not covered by this. secondly, that leaves you 80. What we're talking about is 80% of that 80% would be subject to this restriction. 20% of that 80% could go to the wealthy alumni simply because, or the person that's 21 years, has two kids, and wants to buy there. So you've got the flexibility there. But the bulk of those, the idea is that they are permanent residents, they're a part of the fabric of the community, and they're there substantially full-time. We recognize somebody may be on sabbatical. We recognize that somebody may do...
How do you police
it? No, but also, but you can't police it the first time. How do you police it the second time? You can't.
Well, all you can do is have reporting requirements by the condo association. They advise as to who's in there. The only thing you can finally do is have a per diem penalty. We recognize that down the road it's a problem, but I think if you get through the first wave of people in there, that if you've got a shot, so plus it's going to show up in the title of the plan. Well, or somebody can just ignore it.
Okay, so you have 16 units that can be used by investors, and let's say 15 have been sold and 2 are under contract, and the first person who closes is cool, they don't pay the per diem, and the 17th person who closes is slap the sign on. I don't see how that works, though. I don't see how, I mean, do you just say, oh, I'm sorry, you had a delay in your closing, now it falls apart?
Yeah. Right.
Apart. I don't know how you
and I mean, tell me if I'm not paraphrasing this correctly, but in talking with Casey and with Mike, this is the biggest, we'll find a way to overcome. We think the ground lease in terms of financing, and we'll find a way to overcome some of these other issues, but this is a huge issue for us in terms of it being a viable, profitable, marketable project. It is a huge issue for us.
So telling a retail store owner, you can lease the space and you can pay me rent, but you can't sell your product to anybody who doesn't come in here wearing a Carolina Blue shirt. Or maybe it means you can't sell anything to anybody who doesn't come in wearing a red shirt. I mean, my point is, it really undermines the ability.
I think it would be appropriate. You all understand, and this is a very strong view of the council. As you all come back and let us have some alternatives, and she thinks we'll meet your objectives and then we'll satisfy our house.
Okay.
I just think that the community's perception is that we're spinning our wheels if we line up with student occupied development.
Yeah.
So
we heard that loud and clear, but we also need to be careful about hamstringing the project. And I'm not even, you know, I hear about the student housing, but when I hear that, you know, you guys don't want alumni living there or buying a unit, I mean, that's part of the charm of what's going on all across the country to entice people to come back.
We don't want somebody living there just on football game weekends.
I understand that.
That's what we mean.
But some people would be okay.
Well, it's programmed. I mean, our proposal was 20%.
I understand. To get some lot of kids.
Right. But you know, the public purpose here is to get people
to fire them all under downtown. Okay.
And that's one of the criteria against which this, you know, the council's performance on this negotiation and this project is going to be judged.
Okay.
I clearly see how it's very important to you to have
enough flexibility
to make it economically viable.
It's a challenge.
You know, what happens is we've got, as Susan listed before, when Susan listed before is that, you know, we see this as a very good project and it's going to sell. We don't expect it to sell the way it does. If we had no constraints, we don't expect it to sell the way things do in Florida, which is, you know, like another planet at the moment. It's a frenzied market and things sell out overnight and, you know, we'll see where that all flushes out. So we think that there's going to be steady buying and all that, and every time you layer, you know, more and more constraints on the project, it limits the ability for the project to be successful, which is basically counter to what we all want.
Right.
So yes, we need to accomplish the town's objectives, but one of the biggest objectives of the town is making sure it can get built and be successful. So we also, while we're hearing what the town needs, we also need to make sure that if what you promise to deliver is success, and some of these things are going to constrain the success. So we need to navigate what the most critical thing is to fight for, and what the, you know, where there needs to be some give and take so that we can all achieve the same objective. So we'll give that some thought, because we're not going to solve it right this second.
In line to try to solve this, Glenn, have you seen projects with these kinds of restrictions or similar, or John, have you seen other projects that are trying to address the concern that the town
has? We've seen projects with no investors. We've seen projects with very, very common, you can't lease the units. We've seen absolute prohibition against leasing the period. We've seen those for 1 year, sometimes 6 months.
So have you seen anything that goes, you know, with parking lot age and permanent and all that?
No, permanent resident, no.
Okay.
How does the age component mesh with the town's fair housing ordinance? Is there...
I mean, this is a contractual arrangement here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So are we comfortable that there are no fair housing issues?
Well, I don't know that I say that, but I mean,
I think so. That's something that, like, you know, basically you're saying, like, can somebody sue us because, you know,
right. That's my concern, and I'd like to have...
Like, are we going to do the Supreme Court, right? Pushing network.
Yeah, I really don't want the opening age of the
court. Well, and if we impose the restriction, the person in court is going to be us and not you. We have that discussion.
I don't know, they'll be there with us, I think. Ralph can take a look just to come to his opinion as to whether or not there's a potential problem.
Let's go back to the 4 years because Susan says she could live with the lease terms.
Well, no, I think the ground lease. That was just because she's passionate on that particular subject. There's obviously, we expect to navigate all of this with you because we're assuming that you're going to navigate it with us too.
Talk about 40 years.
Yeah, I only recommend 9 years because what I'm concerned about is that the technology is going so fast that the buildings could be obsolete in 20, 25 years and you're going to want to renovate or replace, and what kind of controls does the town have over that? Can we integrate it into the agreement?
Well, I'm not sure you need to. I mean, that's why public procedure, you know, whenever we have to renovate now, we don't have to be in a partnership with the town. We have to go and we have to submit plans and we have to go through their process in order to get approvals to renovate.
We would put that in the lease or in the CCRs so that I shouldn't make any modifications without approval. We can cover that.
No, that's a police power approval, but that's not a type of approval that
I mean, just to clarify, you know, it's our understanding that we're absolutely partners in the garage, we're absolutely partners in the public space. The retail and the condo tower units, that's our private risk obligation and all of that stuff for which we're going to have to come before you as a government body to approve any of that stuff anyway. So we have a clear place where we're clearly equal partners, and then there's this place where we're sort of on our own. I mean, we're assuming we're, you know, you're not going to steer us on the wrong path because you want to see it happen, but that's all the private stuff is clearly our risk to take through, and monetary basis and approvals process and all of that stuff. Correct?
Yes.
So, in any instance, in the future, if we want to make changes to all that, or any of it, we still have to go through a public approvals process based upon your ordinances and codes and, you know, what words that
does. In addition, Ivy, that under the owners of a piece of land on a contractual basis, you would have to come to us too.
Right.
Which would be a different standard than necessarily what the zoning may be, for example.
Well, we always have the right to do that, right? Privately come to you and then the town.
It would be a requirement that you came to us in the lease.
Okay, but that would that sort of redundant? I'm asking, isn't that sort of redundant?
No, for example, the setback might be 15 feet, and you start out and you're 25 feet, and you come in and want to redo that building and move closer, and we may say no.
Right.
From a contractor standpoint. Even though under the zoning powers, you could do that.
So you're looking at an extra layer.
As the owner of the fee simple land.
Oh, I understand. You're looking from a different position. So
right.
You're saying...
We're from the land owner.
I'm a ground lessor, and I'm telling you have to come for us for approval.
Exactly.
I got you. Okay.
Because that might get into the color of the building, which would not be covered by maybe the money.
Not yet.
And if the ground was for you may not want us to paint your building black.
Right.
Or paint with
green. Or we might not like the replacement shingles.
Right.
Or we might not like the bushes.
Well.
And there's certainly no more blue devils painted on the side of the building right now.
Let's not get personal.
All right, so I think we need to think about that, too.
So we have a 40-year lease, which is also a basic economic thing to the town.
Okay, so we're still talking about the 40 versus the 99, correct?
Right, and then the option to purchase, which we looked at buying out the leasehold, not buying out the paid.
Right. Okay.
And if you bought out the fee, and with a 99-year lease on top.
I understand. Right. I guess it's one half dozen or the other.
I think that's what she has swap positions with us.
Right.
Do you have to feed to an airspace below the 99-year lease above ours?
We would own the airspace above it.
Versus you buying ground and, right.
Which raises a good question. Do you intend this declaration of condominium to go on in perpetuity?
Not for 99 years.
Essentially with a renewal option. Or an extension.
Gordon, with respect to the structure, have y'all structured one like this before? Is this how you structured Centennial?
No, Centennial was just a strict ground lease with the condominiums, but we've done surface condominiums fairly frequently in order to avoid subdivision ordinances and setbacks in subdivision ordinances. And then we, as an example, the Western Hotel in Charlotte, where the city has a substantial investment with condominium now, so that we could own certain components of it for our public participation. And we've done some obviously buildings and airlines, and we've done a condominium and still an airline, so. And that's just like a condominium.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. I was doing more with respect to how the different units were working
on. That's blind stuff. You figured that out, probably.
Yeah, I did figure
that out. You knew I wasn't going to do that.
Bill thought it would be Brian.
Right.
Okay. Can you help us identify where the changes are in this draft versus the draft we received yesterday?
Holly just admitted she gave up.
It was in the public space, which we talked about.
Okay, well, we need to read it.
You just need to read it.
It's in the public space?
And we outlined for you earlier what we talked about, the idea that one, we would own it, two, you all would maintain it, three, you would do the program and the input for us for 2 years, and then it would shift to us.
Okay, so you brought that up before. Why wouldn't it be the reverse? I mean, why wouldn't that be something that you would take ownership of right up front? And that we would help you with rather than vice versa.
You mean the programming?
Yes.
Frankly, we thought you wanted more control of the programming during the initial stages when you're getting stabilized and stuff.
We were thinking that it should be collaborative, and in those first 2 years, it would be better
for y'all to be the lead in the collaboration so that whatever was taking place there could fit in with your promotion and marketing and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And but it would have to be, it should be a collaboration.
Right.
And we'd be glad to do plenty of the work. We would take part of the money that you would make available to employ somebody to work on that virtually full time. So we're not walking away from it. We just thought it makes sense for y'all to be the lead on it in the first couple of years. So
in conjunction with the marketing and the leasing of the retail.
That's right.
And then have
so we can be especially thoughtful and careful about it and do things in a way that would be helpful to you and not contrary to your interest in any way.
Okay.
After that, we would have learned what works, what doesn't work, what's reasonably consistent with the interest of the marketing for that area, that sort of thing. And we could certainly do it virtually.
Yeah.
Going
back to, when we talked about the restrictions on, the condos, in terms of ownership, we should touch on the retail space. One of the things that you have in here is that you want to go approval rates over the mix. And we think that that's, really broad. I'm not really sure I understand what that means as much as you basically, we think it's more acceptable that we have a laundry list of uses that we wouldn't want in the project. I wouldn't want to have to come to you every time I had a tenant and said, are you okay with me putting the tenant in this space?
It's not because of tenants anymore. It's tenant mix that's under square feet per use or per tenant type. We're not interested in controlling the tenants themselves.
Yeah,
you're interested in saying that we could do a corn shop. That kind of thing. Right.
Well, that you couldn't have more than 40% or you couldn't have more than 40% of a particular kind of shop, or couldn't be all bars and things of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard some terms of comment about outlawing national chains or more local businesses. I don't know that that's
the interest is a combination of everything that is being mentioned, that sounds very sensitive to the mix and the ownership. And that's another criteria against which, the success from the public side is really going to be evaluated. And we were interested in having as much control of that as we could, or as much input in that as you could without without doing you harm.
Well, I think that this may drift some from the this document, but my big concern is that Casey spoke about anchorless retail centers, and my fear is that South Hills is a pretty unique place right now. I don't know if it's unique, but it's going through a unique period in its history. It's some elements of downtown are struggling to retail life. And frankly, my fear is that this project may work completely as a residential thing, and the retail stuff could just stay empty. And I really, really don't want to see that. And I just want to hear more. Casey was pretty effusive about the interest he's received and the type of tenants that were going to go in there. And I'm just I remain curious about that. Because there are, the retailers downtown, we hear a lot of complaints about what's going on for them right now. And, I'm just curious what y'all know about it that we don't. Which is probably lots.
Well, I'll give you an idea, for example, what we're doing with our current project down in Palm Beach Gardens, which is it's larger, it's about 90,000 square feet of shop space, and we were not personally interested in dealing a lot of national retailers who are now locating in the market. So we as a company have made a conscious decision. We've turned away companies like Cold Stone Creamery. Now that doesn't mean that maybe towards the back end of the project that we may not end up putting in some national retailers, but we think that once you start on a certain path with national retailers, you're going to preclude the types of tenants, and I'm talking specifically to give you an idea on this project, we're going to preclude somebody who has one or two locations or somebody who wants to start up with a new idea from coming in because their perception is going to be, this is a national retail center, same as all the other lifestyle centers, or same as all the others. So we have literally made a conscious decision not to lease initially to those national types of users that you can find in everybody else's shopping center. With the understanding that as we get enough momentum and get the types of tenants we want in there, that doesn't mean that we won't end up with a few of those. So that's our conscious decision in terms of what we've done on that particular project. We see Chapel Hill, it's a small amount of square footage. It's not something that we expect. If you think about the national retailers that are out there, you know, it's very much of a herd mentality with national retailers. So, you know, Banana Republic, although Chapel Hill is a little bit different in that you do have people like Ralph Lauren and Polo who do test stores and that type of thing, but Banana Republic won't necessarily come in unless Old Navy comes in, and Ann Taylor, and Crate and Barrel. And there's not enough room for all those tenants, and economically they're not viable because they're not the highest rent payers, and they like a lot of tenant improvement dollars to get them into your center. So, again, you also have the latest craze with all the limited food service users. So, you know, whether you have, I don't think you have Moe's up here, but you know, you have Carolina Cafe and a Carolina Bakery, you can see some with Baker VM, the cafe. But you have all of those users that sort of go in herd mentalities too. So you'll find all of the latest and greatest limited food service users in a project, which leaves you lots of empty space. If you're going to go that way, you're going to end up with lots of empty space because you're not going to have the boutiques and the art galleries who are going to want to be associated with those guys up front. So from a marketing standpoint, how we envision this project is, it's going to be going after those local or regional types of tenants who are, you know, there really is only a sort of like a middle-lower income type of retailer on a national basis or really upscale locals, which is what we would look to pull from, somebody that's one or two shop space, or maybe somebody who's got a shop in Ann Arbor, or maybe somebody, you know, from elsewhere to provide the flavor of the project that you need to do. So that's how we envision doing that. That leasing process, just so that you understand, is a slower lease-up process than if we go right out of the gate to get all of these other people we're talking about who have real estate managers and operations people, and they make decisions like this and get going. The other types of tenants we're talking about getting take a longer amount of time. It's more hand-holding. It's careful. These are people who are extremely concerned about their businesses, don't make decisions quickly. It's either a family business or they have one or two locations. The one thing we have to be careful about if we want to legislate basically in a document what mixed use means, maybe there's a, you know, what's the definition of a regional tenant versus a national tenant? If you try to legislate that, what happens? Because maybe it's a great concept where they have 10 stores throughout the country, as opposed, you know, is that considered a national tenant? But it may be perfect for what you want to do here. So I understand what your concerns are, and how, and if you can document that, I don't know. That's really why I wanted to make sure that I brought that.
I didn't intend it to be documented like that.
Okay.
You're kind of looking at it. It's approval of the types of tenants is what I think you're talking about. Not trying to find percentages or you can't do this and you can't do that. That doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so it's more about telling you what tenants I can have.
It's what you just said in interfacing with the town.
It all sounds like house as well, and it also sounds like you don't have a lot. I mean, you have experience in all this, but you don't have more certainty than any of us would with the same situation. I mean,
it's what you see going on across the country where there are a lot more unanchored types of centers. And we've done things both ways. and what we envision for the project, does it, you know, at some point we get to a point where it's important to leave shop space. So, no, we wouldn't want to put a corn shop in. I'm guessing you guys don't want a corn shop. We wouldn't like to do that. But at some point, I may need to put in a national tenant that may not include, you know, somewhere down the line that we would need to consider. But that is not our goal. That is not how we view this project. It's a small project. We don't think that that's the highest and best use for the project.
Well, the reason language is in there, because, you know, the nightmare scenario for me and Cam is, you know, national change with
probably not yet. Right.
That's
all the empty spaces with students living over.
Right.
Or a whole national tenants with nobody living over it.
Not addressing the point.
Right.
Makes people go to the default, which is, oh, they're just going to put in these national tenants. So, you know, I feel obligated to do what we can to increase the likelihood that we're going to have this ideal mix. And I don't know how to define it. I don't know what percentage. It's really, I think we have to work on defining what you just said. What you said sounds great if we get it into a paragraph. Mm-hmm. You know, I've defended this project all along by saying that, recognizing that you may very well need to put national credit chain type people, or, you know, that there's going to be some credit tenants that have to be in here. So, and I recognize that, and I will defend the project that way, but the strong preference is for local,
right,
independent, or regional, you know, small chains people that create the character that we're looking for.
Right.
And we asked you when we got to the parking of the development agreement, you all crashed in language. Just the court, what you just said.
play it back
in the document.
We're going to take that to do exactly what you said.
Right.
So we did what you did in saying no national tenants, and we're going to define a national tenant as X or anything like that.
Okay.
So that's been making sense.
Okay.
But again, this is one of those things that should be carefully scrutinized by the public.
Right.
And the council.
Right.
But it's great to have this conversation to make sure that we're thinking along the same lines as far as the ultimate, you know, most highly desirable retail user. And along the same lines, if we do have some sort of approval mechanism in place, from a practical standpoint, some of these local folks don't understand that it takes a little bit of time to put together a lease and so forth and approval rights. We probably need to set up some mechanism to have anything that needs approval reviewed and responded to very quickly.
Well, but I don't think you're talking about approving every tenant we bring in.
We wouldn't be doing that. No, but I'm just talking about.
There might be some people who are.
Sure.
We're going to set up a commission to do that.
Are you going to leave that? But it just triggered in my mind with respect to anything that's an approval right to be. We need to adjust. We need to put that down as a concept, not this particular issue.
In the purchase agreement, we would expect that.
We don't want this to turn into this whole venture.
No, you don't.
I mean, that was the problem, one of the challenges. But last time we did something like this, it's an awkward.
Yeah, that has to be totally within our. I would guess from your standpoint, that's got to be totally. That's the private portion that's far less than our. Mm-hmm. Right.
I actually.
It seems like what they're saying is that we'll have some language that will say something like, it's the desire of the town and the ground to accomplish the following. And you lay out what we both agree would be most desirable. And in that respect, land and the town agree that the following efforts should be made. And because I don't think you're going to be able to describe the exact conditions.
You can't. That's the problem. We can definitely describe who we're willing to not put in as tenants.
Right.
You know, the not for futures and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
That we can do easily.
Yeah.
it might be useful to have a percentage, a maximum percentage of national pay. I don't know if that's...
But then you get into the definite, like I said, you have the one guy who has got 10 stores across the country. That's difficult to do.
Are you looking at the fleet fee, which was written up in the paper? There's paper right here.
Yeah.
And that's clearly a national chain going on, and I don't view that as a national chain.
Right.
Those are all locally run. The person that has it has to be in the store.
That's not here, absolutely.
That's not. No, but yet that is a national chain.
And Record Bar was a national chain, but their second, their store was in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, and maybe think they're characteristic of Chapel Hill, even though they may be a recognized chain, that you would want them to be in your project. So
yes.
It's a slippery slope. Mm-hmm.
I've seen this before, but because it hasn't got sufficient points or review points by the town that 25% that you present 75% leave us. I've never seen it before. I'm just thinking out loud here.
What's the total amount of retail space we're talking about?
Or that?
It's not worth it, man. If it was 240,000 square feet, that'd be different.
Right. This is pretty much talking about your average tenant size. Excluding the bank, if it went in there, 1,500 square feet.
1,500 square feet. We have that larger space in that second building.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Harris Peter did call me.
Good.
And I got him a plan. I don't, their footprint maybe, even with the fact that they're flexible, they would consider doing some kind of modified, you know, downtown kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know whether or not we can get to the size we're talking to them now.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other types of uses like that that we would envision going in that second building.
One is smart retail club.
Retail with a lobby in it.
Yeah.
But the other spaces are probably going to be somewhere between, you know, with Rosemary and Franklin between 1,000 and...
Mm-hmm. There's a guy in Charlotte, Mike, I'll send you his name, Reeves, that might consider what I would call the New York model for a neighborhood grocery.
Okay.
Harris Teeter's. We're taking a very, very restrictive view of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are. I don't think that they'll go below, like, he wouldn't give me a number, but he, like, I would guess somewhere between 15 and 20,000 square feet.
Was that one corner shop and 13,000?
Yeah, and we had them looking at one, and 8,000 range.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You couldn't make it work?
No.
Yeah.
They can't think with the stuff going all the way to the ceiling.
Right.
In their lives, they don't think that way.
Right.
Reeves might do that.
Okay.
Bank of America subsidized them to put the first grocery downtown in Charlotte.
Okay.
How's it going? Okay, there's nothing to them.
Okay.
There's a lot of prepared food, but I can see he did a lot of prepared food in something like this.
Right.
Since everybody wants, nobody wants to cook anymore.
Right.
It's good. Yeah, and a lot of pedestrian traffic with this, I think, for the grocery store. A whole neighborhood across the street, University Square, Granville Towers, people in the buildings, and they're all people in the highway.
I guess you want to talk to the industry too.
Some of
us.
Yeah. There's also been a lot, there's an influx, and I don't know how much you hear from Shirley, but lately there's been a lot of influx to Chapel Hill. I mean, Earth Fair is now here, and Whole Foods is now here, and so,
yeah, our grocery stores are expensive, very expensive, and incredibly expensive.
Okay, have you been in there?
Mm-hmm.
I was in one in Nashville. What a great store.
Anyway, you understand it a lot.
They're doing better than us.
Here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been in the one here.
They're open later.
Yeah. Okay.
Are there any other places that are changes that...
Yes. There are two concepts in here, which, as I recall, are in the RSP, but we're not in the proposals. One is what I call a clawback, and one is what John calls a home run.
Home
run insurance. The clawback is the concept that after you get through your construction financing, go through your first actual financing of the retail space. That if in the 10th year you come in and refinance it, pull out $10 million because everything's gone way up. But we would have a percentage of that for the participation in the net proceeds. And then the second one is the home run insurance. And that's the concept that the town is doing what it's doing based upon co-formas that show that you're going to sell condominiums at an average price of X and that you're estimating gross sales of Y. And all of a sudden, the units that were $250,000 selling for $450,000, like happened in Florida, that we get to participate in an amount over whatever the projection was.
So more than the 20% over the 15%?
Yes. John can explain that.
No, you said it wrong.
Okay, so both our issues on those two are probably going to be that we've got all the risk on the financing, we've got all the risk in making the project work, we've got all the risk on the cost, so...
And we got the dirt.
And we're prepaying the risk.
So we're prepaying, you know, we're prepaying all of that.
We have to have monetary default.
And yet...
So like, if you got an airplane and I've got the air...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a situation where the your income is way exceeds far exceeds what your imagination was, even in the performer right now.
Well, what if it works in reverse where our imagination is so not exceeds that there's no participation from the town in reverse because you're asking us to fix the amount and there's no, you know, you're looking to, you know, mitigate your risk. So we're taking all the risk, which we understand, and but now you're saying, well, if it's such a big deal, then we should get a piece of that too. Well, we're already contemplating giving you upside on that. You know, the first on the condos, the 20%, you know, after we reach the threshold of 15%, you're already going to be making a piece of that 20%. That's not limited. So if you end up with a 25% return, you're making that 20%.
I guess I just thought maybe if you were making a killing, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us 5-10% of that killing.
But you are making a killing. You're getting the 20%. That's not, there's no ceiling on that.
Where is there no ceiling on that?
On the 20% of anything over 15%. Once we reach our yield of 15%, it's not a guess, 20%.
Their cost, once they hit that, we get 20%
of whatever. Yeah, that's not limited. We're not saying if, you know, we get a windfall, you're capped at X amount. You're still participating in all the windfall.
Okay, I know that was not a chance. Okay. Where is that terminology?
That's at, look at page 5.
Okay.
It's the bottom of page 4.
Right.
Yeah,
it's C. Right. Page 4. With additional education, a percentage of net proceeds from sale of a market rate condo after you receive a return on your condo.
Yeah. Yeah, so that just keeps going. I mean, that doesn't, you know, we hear
it. Okay, you're perfect.
It's called home run.
It's all done.
Okay, I can live with
that. And then on the refinancing thing, we're, you know, again, to call back on the refinancing, we're taking all the risk, we're doing all that. You know, we don't think that we should have to participate in any financing in the fall, which is hard to imagine as interest rates are going the other way. I mean, that may have been true 10 years ago, and I still would have argued with you, because who could have seen that crystal ball go down so far, but... You know, that's the same thing. We have an issue with that.
Where is that document?
Next paragraph.
Yeah, it's fine. Z.
The last sentence of Z. What did you talk about that?
With respect to all of the brackets that are in here, Glenn, as far as the percentages?
I'll turn those over to John.
Okay. Is there still a discussion among the town as far as whether or not the percentages set forth in the proposal are acceptable, or, you know, y'all?
Yeah, I think everybody has to wait for the budget farther along. Things are changing on laws, and so I just put all the numbers out.
Okay.
And you all have been facing with John as you work for your budget, and is 15% the right return on cost, or should it be 14.3 or 17.8 or what have you?
Okay.
One of the things that we needed to talk through also is on C. In terms of the return, the 20% after the 15%, the affordable housing takes a loss of about $100,000 per unit. So we're assuming that the 15% would assume that we got whole. I just want to make sure we're all construing that the same way. We have to subsidize the affordable housing by $100,000 per unit. So if we're building 35 units, for example, it's $350,000. We would assume that we wouldn't be paying you your 20% on the market-based condo while we're taking a loss of $350,000. We would have to be even before the cost is
So while we've got a loss on this one side and we're still in the red, we don't want to be going farther in the red.
Yeah, in terms of just how the formula works from the calculation, we just want to make sure that we're clear that we aren't giving the town a profit while we're still at a loss.
Which would in fact keep us farther in the red.
Right.
Put us farther in the red.
Right.
So the way you would express it is, whatever the return is on your total cost for all the units.
Right, on the net, correct.
Right, so
on the net.
Take the sale price of affordable, the sale price of non-affordable, cost of everything, and that's how you would arrive at it?
Correct. Otherwise, we're at further loss. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was the spirit, and I just want to make sure that we all interpreted that the same way. We wouldn't be paying you a profit. We would look for the affordable housing to be break even. We wouldn't pay you a profit on the affordable because that would just dig into both of our contracts.
So it would be essentially all construction costs associated with all units versus all revenue associated with all units.
It would be all costs, not just construction costs.
Yes, all costs.
Okay. Associated with all units.
And then we would pay you the 20% on the market, because there wouldn't be 20% to pay on the affordable, because we're all looking to break even on that.
I understand what you're saying.
Right.
That sounds better.
Yeah, it's a little cloudy in your response.
It is, and that's why I wanted to clarify, because when it said excluding the affordable housing, I wanted to make sure that didn't mean it was excluding the cost of the affordable housing.
But what it says here is that the total project cost for the market bring residential components of $40 million, and the profit generated on those is $6
million. Right.
And so we interpret this that you were excluding the affordable housing.
Right. What we meant to say was we're excluding paying the profit on the affordable housing because we're not expecting there to be one, but we didn't want to be paying you on the loss.
We won't talk about that, Holly.
Okay.